This is the Quality News Network. President Bush and Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki met today and held a press conference in Jordan a day after the two were first scheduled to meet. President Bush supported al-Maliki by saying he is the right man for the job. Once again, the president insisted the United States military would not leave Iraq, quote, until the job is complete, end quote. The bipartisan Iraq Study Group will release its findings on Wednesday. The New York Times reports the members reached a consensus that the United States should gradually pull back its troops, but there is no timetable for that major pullout. There are 15 brigades, or about 140,000 U.S. troops, currently in Iraq. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki told ABC News that his country's forces will be ready to take over security by June of 2007. That would mean the U.S. troops could start to withdraw then. Al-Maliki is asking the 35 lawmakers and cabinet ministers loyal to Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, who left the government to protest the meeting, to end their boycott. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is in the Mideast today for separate talks with the Israelis and Palestinians following the ceasefire in Gaza on Sunday. She met with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas and afterwards with Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. She urged both sides to intensify their efforts and try to reach a long-stalled peace deal. Pope Benedict prayed at a Turkish mosque in Istanbul, the 17th-century Blue Mosque, today to restore goodwill with Muslims after his controversial comments about the religion 2 months ago. He was only the second pope to pray at a mosque in history. A former Russian prime minister who is the leader of a liberal opposition party has been hospitalized, and doctors treating him suspect he may have been poisoned. However, his condition is improving in a Moscow hospital. Angola, the second largest oil producer in Africa and the largest supplier of crude to China, will apply next month to become the newest member of OPEC. Former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack, a Democrat, kicked off his 2008 presidential campaign today in the small town where his political career started. The citizenship test to become an American will have 144 revised questions for immigrants to answer. And according to the Justice Department, there are 7 million American adults in U.S. jails or on probation or parole. That is a record number. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Pregnant women and those who plan to become pregnant are being warned not to take the antidepressant Paxil because it may cause birth defects. A group of obstetricians issued the warning today, and it will be published next month. Today, France's Alcatel officially purchased Lucent Technologies. The $11.6 billion deal created a worldwide giant telecom business. The Airbus A380 Super Jumbo Jet, the world's largest passenger plane, has completed the last leg of its 18-day test mission. It took it around the world, and it now awaits approval from U.S. and European safety regulators, which is expected by mid-December. The Labor Department reported an unexpectedly big increase in the number of Americans filing for unemployment. Last week, the amount was up 34,000 to 357,000. The Commerce Department said that in October, consumer spending picked up by 0.2%. That's the best result in the past 3 months. Also in October, personal incomes rose 0.4%. Billionaire Kirk Kerkorian, who is General Motors' largest shareholder, is selling another 14 million shares of the automaker's stock for around $400 million. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.96 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was up 5 points, the Nasdaq was flat, the S&P 500 was up 1. There's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. This is Head On. It's Thursday night. I'm Bob Kincaid. Flying solo, as it were. I hope you can deal with the fact that if you call in this evening, you know, the same usual rules apply when Agnes is not behind the microphones. You'll just go on hold, and I won't know who you are. And so, you know, let's just sort of play fair, but you get the idea. You know how the drill works. Agnes, just because people like her better than they do me, I mean, yeah, let's deal with it. Agnes is helping out with my father. He's home from the hospital this evening. And, you know, home from the hospital doesn't mean well. So she's trying to attend to some of his needs this evening as we try to make things as decent and pleasant and otherwise tolerable as possible for him. I was talking his physician, his attending, called today from the hospital and said, "I get the idea he's a little bit of a challenge to take care of." I said, "Yeah, but you know what, Doc? That was a hell of a challenge to raise, so that's okay." But he wanted to be home, and I don't blame him. Hospital's a hell of a place to try to be sick. And apparently I touched, there was some response or some resonance in my remarks about our own experience at the hospital a couple of nights ago. I got a very interesting email that I'm going to share with you that I thought you might find interesting. Our listener, good friend Roy, who writes from Florida, said, "I've been involved with pro bono work for the last 3 years for a nonprofit organization, and so currently don't have health insurance. Another member of the fraternity. That will change as soon as I start up a business, but for now, if I have a serious health condition, I have to resort to going to an emergency room, which is what I did when I experienced what I thought was a severe problem." Roy says, "I'd had, during the night, prior to visiting the emergency room, a very serious convulsive episode with my heart. It awakened me during the night, a very violent convulsive explosion, or so it seemed, and luckily I was all right when it was over. I'd thought I had a heart attack, and so I went to the emergency room in Jacksonville, Florida, the next morning, a very large hospital. And of course, Jacksonville is a large city with several million people. We arrived at the emergency room around 8 a.m., There were about 35 other people already waiting when we arrived. To make a long story short, 12 hours later and not a single person had been seen. Several left after 6 to 8 hours, and of course, new arrivals came during this time. We left around 8 p.m., not having seen anyone. Indeed, not a single person had been throughout that long day. There were several in the emergency room with bacterial infections like strep throat, and all they would have needed was a script for an antibiotic, yet they sat around hour after hour after hour in a great distressed coughing and probably spreading germs as well. The really pathetic thing about this visit was the occurrence of several very old persons, seemingly very sick, and they sat there hour after hour after hour. Again, we left at 8 p.m. and not a single person had been seen." Roy says, "I've donated several $100,000 of my time as a computer programmer for the betterment of our society, working with a nonprofit organization that does work to help protect drinking water sources. Yet when I needed just a quick EKG to see if I might have had a heart attack, there was no help to be found. and later traveled nearly 100 miles to a less populated area and made it into the emergency room the next day, and even then I was seen for about 15 minutes and was referred to a private physician for a closer look. The appointment I made was yet another 30 days away. Thank you, sir. We hope you'll have your heart attack on schedule. Jesus. Watching all the sick people, especially the very sick and very old, not get any attention at the emergency room during the 12 hours I was there was the most pathetic display of American health care I could have imagined. It says a lot about who we are as a nation. Yeah, it does, Roy. It really, really does. And, you know, it's not the fault... it's not. If you apply any skull sweat to this at all, it is not the fault of the health care system that is, or the, it's not the, what am I trying to say? It's not the fault of the payment method. It's not the fault of the billing method, as the emergency room physician tried to put to me a couple of nights ago. Oh, this is government medicine. No, it wasn't at all. I think if you look back in the last couple of days, Dennis Kucinich of Ohio, a great American, is addressing again the health care crisis. You know, back when he was running for president in 2004, he said, you know, of course we couldn't get the mainstream media, oh, he's the bachelor presidential candidate who used to be mayor of Cleveland. That's Dennis Kucinich. Yeah, yeah. Do you know Cleveland went bankrupt when he was mayor? And couldn't be bothered to pay attention to any of the significant policy positions that he put forward because, you know, they had decided that he wasn't a credible candidate. Not the electorate. The media. I watched his press people go absolutely hog wild trying to get the media to pay attention to it because one of the things that Dennis Kucinich pointed out is that we are already paying enough money annually to fund universal health care in the United States. It's just that we're giving it to the wrong people, namely the great big honkin' insurance companies, the State Farms of the world, and the Aetnas, and the AIGs, and the Blue Cross Blue Shields, and who have a hell of a lot more overhead and have to answer for a profit margin. Medicare doesn't have to answer to a profit margin. Neither does the Veterans Administration healthcare system have to answer for a profit margin. But I've got some smart aleck ER doctors saying, oh, this is government medicine. We admitted him for a possible heart attack and pneumonia, and we can't see about nothing else. Jesus. You know, and it only gets worse. For as long as George Bush remains in office, to pick up the theme we closed on last night, the necessity for the removal of this insane, evil little man from the office of the presidency, legally and peacefully and by means of the constitutional mechanism that is already established, i.e. impeachment, health care is just another thing that is only going to continue to get worse and worse and sicker for so long as that man occupies the Oval Office. It's just that simple. Oh, and by the way, a program note, not sure yet exactly what sort of shape tomorrow evening is going to take. I'm going to be on the road. We've got some work that we're doing away from the studios, and I won't be behind the microphone tomorrow evening. It'll either be a repeat or it'll be someone filling in for me, so, you know, you'll have to tune in then and find out for sure. I'm not trying to be a horse's rear end about it. I just don't know how it shakes out yet. But we'll be back on Monday, bright and shiny. But in light of that, I want to share something with you that I found over at opednews.com. Just going to read it straight out, and then we'll go into some news issues and so forth. Opednews.com, an article or an opinion piece by Faith Carr, who describes herself as a 51-year-old exhausted political activist. And the title is What It Means to Be an American in 2006. Listen carefully. Being an American means being afraid. Afraid of your government. Afraid of your police. Afraid of surveillance. Afraid of your future. Being an American means no right to trial, no habeas corpus, no privacy, and ever-dwindling legal rights. No legal protections from corporate greed, environmental devastation, workplace safety, no legal right to protest, no free speech. Being an American means needing a passport to travel across our continental borders. It means having to register when you leave and when you return. Being an American means your employer can fire you and send your high-tech job overseas. It means your company can steal your pension and rig your 401k without pesky regulations to protect us. They can skip our annual raises and Christmas bonuses while they stuff their own pockets with profits. It means you can sicken and die when you can't afford the medications that can save, prolong, or improve your life. Being an American without means means your children can't grow up to be president anymore. It means your elected representatives don't have to listen to your voice. No cash? It's okay. No voice. Being an American means the banks, insurance companies, the merchants can steal your money without having to answer to anyone. They can pay themselves grand bonuses and drive $100,000 automobiles, live in huge palatial homes in untold comfort while Americans still live in FEMA trailers and homes without heat. Being an American means forgetting everything you grew up believing in. Justice, fair play, work hard, get yourself up by your bootstraps, cheaters never prosper. Truth, justice, and the American way. Gone. All gone. I used to say the Pledge of Allegiance every morning at school, eyes watering with pride. Went to college with the help of my government. Traveled all over Europe proudly as an American. I've lived in large cities and small towns in America, happy to work hard, raise my children with values and honesty. Vote and participate as an American with pride. What has happened to America? What is left of the American dream is a nightmare of fear, growing deprivation, unaffordable housing, college out of the question, and prosperity out of reach. This is what it means to be an American in 2006. I love my America, the one I still foolishly believe in. I want it back. Isn't that the truth? Doesn't that just that just grabs you? And another piece that I want to share with you from a friend of the show. And I'd like your thoughts on these things. I'm not bored. Sometimes I read things. I'd like to know how it is that or whether or not you share these opinions. This is a friend of the show by name Charlie Sullivan, writing at Information Clearinghouse. Clueless in America, feeding the tapeworms of desire. And Charlie says, it may well be that there is no hope for the American Republic, that we are by choice beyond reclamation. Much of the world sees the average American as detached from reality, isolated from the suffering of others. They see us as self-absorbed, overindulgent, willfully ignorant, and imbued with enormous hubris, characterizations that are difficult to argue against. Unfortunately, I'm well acquainted with the type. Most Americans somehow believe that we are an exceptional people, God's chosen few. It would not be the first time in history this has occurred. The world is our oyster, and it is ours to use as we see fit, even if it does not belong to us. To the physically strongest and morally depraved, to the wealthiest, go the spoils. Deep down, Americans may reason that if we were to continue our lives of excess, if we were to carry on driving our Hummers and, other inefficient motorized polluting obscenities, we need an inexhaustible supply of oil. As keepers of the world's strongest military, we have the means of procuring oil anywhere in the world, and that makes it ours. Might makes right in capitalist America, and we have the weaponry to get whatever we want. That is exactly how the West was won. It was stolen at gunpoint and driven by religious fervor. We must feed the insatiable tapeworms of our desires right up to the moment of the apocalypse. That kind of thinking, if such mediocrity and willful ignorance can be called thought, is an oft-repeated strand that runs through the tapestry of the American psyche. It is one of those strains of fabulous mythology that makes America a difficult place for some of us to live. From the moment of birth onward, Americans are conditioned to think that we are not only special, but we are superior to everyone else, that we are somehow entitled not only to our share of the world's wealth, but to everyone else's share as well. Thus, we remain primitive conquistadors in our thinking. We believe that we are the truly enlightened, the envy of the world, and everyone aspires to emulate our shining example. Americans also believe that they are the greatest democracy to emerge from the birthing mists of history. The idea was drummed into our heads since we could talk, even in the absence of any supporting evidence, and is continued through a fairy tale presentation of history and perpetuated daily in the corporate media. Critical thinking is not one of our strong suits, as exemplified by the sitting president. Whatever the origins of the grossly inflated American self-image, it is in part the paradigm behind the ideology of manifest destiny, a force that continues rampaging and pillaging most of the world in its quest for markets and wealth. Thus, we witness the tragic consequences of the preservation of the American way, a wrath the rest of the world is expected to incur with gratitude. We cannot recognize that the American dream is the world's nightmare. Our gluttonous wants, we think, supersede the right of other people to exist. The gilded highway is built upon the bones of the victims of genocide and empire, and that is what makes our ride into oblivion so smooth. What can be said about a culture that is willing to destroy the biosphere to create irreversible global climate change for the sake of private profit and a few short decades of drunken exuberance and intemperance? In what kind of value system can the acquisition of material goods and services really outweigh the right of others to exist, including our own children and their children, not to mention more than 30 million species of flora and fauna that have as much right to live, if not more, than we do? What global good could possibly come from an economic system predicated upon selfishness and waste and foisted upon the world with carpet bombs? What common good can stem from a belief system that places greater value on profits than on life itself? How can spiritual health be expected from a system that embraces spiritual emptiness and depravity as virtuous? The enormous weight of conscience and awareness can be quite demoralizing at times, a heavy burden to bear. Even my own family is without social scruples. Some of them are as addicted to shopping as a cocaine user seeking a chemical fix in a dimly lit alley at 2 o'clock in the morning somewhere in the metropolis. They have no control over the addiction and go forth into the crowded malls night after night with vacant stares and minds programmed to consume. They are suffocating under mountains of debt, but the addiction must be satisfied at all costs. It can be seen that Americans are a spiritually starved people, despite bold proclamations of religiosity and faith, but at some level we must intuit that we have few freedoms and are slaves in an economic system that dehumanizes us into mere commodities and turns us into voracious consumers. We are not the free and fulfilled people we claim to be. We are the property of our employers, objects to be used for purposes not of our own choosing. Industrialized religion did not save America from capitalism and the endless barrage of advertisements that constantly assail our senses and shape our perceptions. It gave the appearance of moral credence to untenable ideas that are at odds with the teachings of the world's great religions as well as the natural rhythms of earth and sky. This explains the bizarre sociopathic behavior induced by Black Friday and other strange phenomena fostered by capitalism. It also explains America's world-leading per capita rate of incarceration and our pervasive addiction to drugs and alcohol in this way. It neatly explains our persistent cultural violence. Let us recognize that these are not symptoms of social or economic health. They are indisputable evidence of debilitating, life-threatening disease and spiritual death. Material goods and services are a poor substitute for inner tranquility and global community. We are a people bombarded by commercial media every waking hour of our lives. Our troubled existence is a matrix of distracting white noise from which the only escape is the calm slumber of death. The result is that few of us have ever had a true waking moment in our lives. We have replaced wild nature with Disney World and have forgotten which is real and which is bogus. We have recreated God in the image of capital and put him on our currency. Even so, despite the dominant paradigm of capitalism, there are Americans who have escaped the fate of excess to which so many others have fallen prey. There are millions who were not caught in the web of commercialism, who have maintained a spiritual connection to the earth and to the greater biological community and to the unfathomable cosmos beyond. There are millions of people who still consider a long walk in unbroken wilderness their greatest blessing, as something beyond valuation by capital. Despite pervasive cultural brainwashing, there are millions of Americans who still care about the health of the planet and the rights of other people, and they struggle to be heard above the din of excessive commercialism that overwhelms the senses and causes us to behave like caged rats in a laboratory. They are not members of any particular nation. They are world citizens, plain members of Aldo Leopold's biotic community. America is a land of baffling contradictions and contrasts that will not be easily understood by future historians. So it may be unwise to judge all by the deeds of the debased majority. It is the conscientious ethical fringe that keeps us afloat and provides hope for a better future by operating outside of the mainstream. Thus, for every warmongering president and gluttonous corporate executive born here, there is also his, her opposite. The Henry Thoreaus, Harriet Tubmans, and Howard Zinns of this world. For every Donald Trump and David Rockefeller, America spawns, there stands a Mark Twain and a Martin Luther King or a Sitting Bull to counter him. It is the voices of conscience and reason that tends to be drowned out by corporate media. There is one additional problem with being heard. Progressives tend to be assassinated or imprisoned in America, and our detractors celebrated as models for success. Again, the author Charles Sullivan. I'm proud to say Charlie is a fellow West Virginian of mine. We've emailed back and forth a little bit. I hope to get Charlie on the show at some point. You can read that for yourself again at informationclearinghouse.info. Clueless in America. And I shared that with you in the main because of the remarks that Charlie makes about the fact that there are millions of people who still consider a long walk in unbroken wilderness their greatest blessing. And the remarks that Charlie makes in regard to the environment generally. Because, you see, there's a story out that this is 2 days in a row that the Washington Post has sent me screaming around the room. And I guess it's not the Post's fault, it's reportage. From today's Washington Post, page A03. Simple headline, nothing complex about it. Court hears global warming case. The Supreme Court yesterday cautiously confronted for the first time the issue of global warming, hearing a challenge to the Bush administration's refusal to regulate emissions of greenhouse gases in new vehicles. 12 states led by Massachusetts and joined by the District of Columbia are objecting to the EPA's decision to decline to issue emission standards for new cars and trucks. And of course, because this court is largely packed with sickening conservatives who are so old that they cannot expect to be upon this mortal coil for much longer before they do their shuffling off it, there was a great deal of skepticism in the arguments. And leading that charge was, of course, none other than the constitutional originalist, Antonin Scalia. This man is an embarrassment to the idea of the Supreme Court. Of course, he was brought to us by a man who was an embarrassment to the idea of the presidency, Ronald Reagan. And the question was put whether the states can even show they're facing any kind of imminent harm that's required before they can bring a case to the court. And that led to the following quote from Antonin Scalia, you know, the guy who flips off cameramen because he's an upstanding Roman Catholic. Upstanding Christian. Here's the quote. I mean, when is the predicted cataclysm? Because, you see, Antonin Scalia fancies himself a bit of a scholar and a wit and a bon vivant. Oh, yeah, he's cute. When is the predicted cataclysm? Well, sadly, it's not soon enough to carry you away with it, Tony, you pig. And so a little bit later, Massachusetts Attorney General James R. Milkey informed the court that 200 miles of the state's coastline, Massachusetts, are threatened by rising seas that are a result of global warming. And he said, the harm does not suddenly spring up in the year 2100. It plays out continuously over time. You know, thereby putting paid to Scalia's smarmy, smart-alecky, when is the predicted cataclysm? Oh, bring me a lark's vomit canapé now, boy! When is the predicted cataclysm? And can we get front row seats? And what he said in response to, when is the predicted cataclysm? James R. Milkey said, once the gases are emitted, they stay a long time. The laws of physics take over. But of course, Scalia is one of those foot-washing Opus Dei freaks. So he doesn't believe in the laws of nature. He doesn't believe in natural laws. He just believes in magic and gossipy water moccasins and sun standing still in the sky and crackers that turn into human flesh in your stomach. He can't be bothered with the laws of science. And he Scalia made a real ass of himself during his interrogation about the science behind this. He said, "Well, you know, carbon dioxide might be a pollutant in the air, but he said, yeah, is it a pollutant in the stratosphere? God, I wish I had audio of this. Shame on me for not. Is it a pollutant in the stratosphere?" And Attorney General Milkey said, respectfully, Your Honor, it's not the stratosphere. It's the troposphere. You ready for this? You people who love science? You people who cherish reason? I mean, my God, I waited till midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, to take my son out on the weekend. Not a school night. To see if we could catch the Leonid meteor shower. Of course, it was cloudy, and that was for naught. But that's as close to magic as my young son will ever come, to watch something like that. Far above the troposphere, I think. Could be wrong. I'm not a smartass like Antonin Scalia. Because Antonin Scalia, when Milkey said, respectfully, Your Honor, it's not the stratosphere, it's the troposphere, Antonin Scalia said, troposphere, whatever. I told you before, I'm not a scientist. That's why I don't want to have to deal with global warming, to tell you the truth. Okay, so I did a dialect. I apologize. Troposphere, Whatever. I told you before, I'm not a scientist. That's why I don't want to have to deal with global warming, to tell you the truth. He wants to be a constitutional originalist, and he wants to argue the original intent of the Constitution, but he doesn't want to talk about science. He wants to talk about what was originally in the Constitution. There aren't any automobiles in the Constitution. There isn't any greenhouse gases in the Constitution. But you know what? He can't be bothered with that, because I'm not a scientist. You know, memo to Antonin Scalia. Retire, asshole. We don't need a septuagenarian Eddie Haskell sitting on the court and debasing its honor and its traditions and the vital function that it must play in a civilized society. We need brains. Some of the best lawyers in the country are great lawyers because they would have made great doctors. And some of them, lots of people come into law school from engineering school where they've already been scientists. And they make great lawyers and great law students because they have been imbued and immersed with the scientific method that demands inquiry and facts and logic and reason. And the best we can qualify for is the jurisprudential equivalent of Eddie Haskell. Look, wasn't that funny? Troposphere, stratosphere. Oh, dang, I'm a hoot. I'll be here all week. Try the ribs. I despise these conservative jerks. You know, Scalia doesn't believe in things like condoms or birth control, and he's bred like a bunny, and he's got children and grandchildren, and for all I know, great-grandchildren, but he can't even muster up enough of a give-a-damn about them to know the difference between the stratosphere and the troposphere and whether or not the Bush administration is actively trying to poison it. God! Retire, Tony. Go on the dadgum lecture circuit, will ya? Take that knee-slapping, jaw-dropping, aw shucks, har-hardy, har-har, constitutional legalism, and rather than suggesting that you stick it where the sun doesn't shine, take it on the road. It'll be a laugh riot. God Almighty, we are talking about the very future of the planet and the people who happen to live thereon. You know? And this goon, this conservative, sits on the Supreme Court. Troposphere, stratosphere, screw it. But you see, that what they do on this court really does matter, and it does influence our daily lives, and it does have impact on the way we get from day to day to day. Because this is the way they rule in this case is going to speak to environmental efforts to clean up power plants. And it's going to speak to the efforts of individual states to try to monitor and regulate and control the amount of filth that can be pumped into the air by things like old school coal-fired, non-clean, non-scrubbed, non-bagged power plants. God, some company in Texas is trying to build a half a dozen or more of them. And so while Fat Tony Scalia sits there and makes jokes, when is the cataclysm? When is the predicted cataclysm? While he does that, a little more mercury goes into the air. While he does that, a little more CO2 goes into the air. A little, a little, a little, and somewhere down the road, it's a lot. Because as Assistant Attorney General Milkey said, once these gases are emitted, they stay a long time, and the laws of physics take over. All right, I'm going to the phones. Let's play Talk Radio Russian Roulette. Hey, who have I got? Hello? Hello? All right. We'll try another one. Hi, welcome to Head On. Who have I got?
You got me, boy.
Hey, what's up?
I just want to thank you, my son. You have done the world a service. Not the United States of America, but the world a service by reading what you read at the beginning of the hour. Thank you.
True stuff, ain't it?
Yes, it is. It is a fact. And what you have been preaching and teaching to this world. And, son, sometimes you preach, but most often you teach. And there are people in this world that just need to hear your voice. And thank you for your voice.
Well, thank you, Bob. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I thought those two pieces just sort of dovetailed together because it was the idea of clueless
and
terrified.
Yes, clueless and terrified, yes. The world is in a real pinch, and we need to get rid of this bunch. We need to get rid of them, and we need to get rid of them, like my friend Mike Malloy says, legally and peacefully. Just send them to Crawford and let them hold hands with the Shah and or whoever, whatever deity or whatever thing they want to hold hands with and kissy-kissy with. But we need to get rid of these people. We really do. We need to get rid of the Bush administration and bring in a new age of thoughtful, you know, thoughtful people, people that think like you do and I do. I think about this world and the world I'm leaving to my grandchildren. And I think if we do not stop this juggernaut that they have thrown at us for the last 40 years, then we're lost. And now we have to take the power away from them and send them back to Crawford, Texas, where they belong, so they can, what do? You went out there and cut some brush and said, need some wood? Well, hey, I'll give them some wood, Louisville, like you said the other night, Louisville Slugger, please, God, don't let it materialize in my hands, because I'll give him a Louisville Slugger and he can have some wood.
Yeah.
And that's what I heard in your voice. But I heard it in the voice of 10 million other Americans and 10,000 million other voices, the dead from Buchenwald and from Auschwitz that his grandfather
helped fund
to put those souls in the graves. And I heard the graves of the 56 million that have died in that war that George Herbert and George W. Bush put into those graves. You understand where I'm coming from? I understand.
I speak
war.
It. Yeah, I do.
And I do. I have been to war. I have participated in war. And I hate war more than any other human being on this planet. I hate it. I hate it worse than I hate myself, Bob. And, there are times I hate myself more than I hate Satan, because I more time for these people. We have to stop them. We are...
You know, that's the thing that amazes me. You know, it's proof. Antonin Scalia, for instance, Bob, he's proof that if you walk around telling people you're a genius long enough, somebody will eventually go, did you know he's a genius? Because the guy is a moron. I mean, it amazes me he got through 1L.
Yes, yes. That thing.
I mean, this business, if you study constitutional originalism, it says that if it didn't happen in at the time the Constitution was written, that it can't be considered. You know, in that school of thought, cars don't exist.
Please, Bob, please.
Indoor plumbing doesn't work in constitutional originalism.
Give me a moment.
Okay.
Please, okay? Anthony Scalia, who appointed him to that position?
Reagan.
Okay. And what?
A freak.
No, please. Who appointed Anthony Scalia?
Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
A brain-dead idiot. Okay?
Yeah.
And who... Oh, please, God, forgive me for this. Who preceded Ronald Reagan?
Yeah, Jimmy Carter.
No. I said preceded. Who proceeded? That's what
who followed? Who came after? George H.W. Bush.
Okay. No. Yeah, George H.W., okay. And who did he appoint? Okay. And then you stop and you follow... You just thought, what was that thing that boy came up with, that timeline thing? Okay, follow the timeline, okay? Who did what when? Okay? A timeline, okay?
Yeah.
But first, Reagan appointed Scalia, and Scalia is a brain dead, just like Ronald Reagan. And you got these Republicans, like you used to, I love that. I got these, you know, little things I throw to my German Shepherd to tear up. They got these pig faces on them, and he destroys them within a day or two, and I got to get him another one. And the thing is, Bob, you're dealing with a society, a whole society. The United States of America has been taken over by Walmart, Kmart, Shop Mart or whatever Mart, and they've been used so long to the point where that's what they do. They just go and they shop. You were talking about shopping in this, you know, that funny thing that when they get that star glazed eyes and they have no sense of what they're going, but they'll just waste their whole fortune to get this stupid thing that came from China. You know, hey, I was there. I know how it went down, and it's stupid. It is so ignorant that people just rush off to the Walmarts and the Kmarts and the whatever to buy plastic little doodads for Christmas. It has nothing to do with the birth or the life of a man. And I say a man because he came into this world as a man, and he lived his life as a man and died a horrible death as a man. And most people forget that baby Jesus died horribly tortured by torturers, just like...
By conservatives.
Yeah, but by conservatives, yeah, like Lynn Cheney or...
The 2,000-year-old equivalent of George Bush and William Crystal and George Will, you know, the old guardians of culture, the culture, the Bill O'Reillys of 2,000 years ago are the people who, you know, and let's quit using that word crucified, tortured Jesus Christ to death. Yeah, conservatives did it.
Bingo, and you just won the lottery.
No,
you just told the truth, Bob. And if you just tell the truth, you won the lottery. It doesn't matter whether you get a billion or $1 trillion, because they're just, it's fake. You know, whatever you get from winning the lottery, it is fake. But if you tell the truth, you just won. Oh my God, son, you have won it all. Because the truth, like Martin Luther King Jr. said, yeah, the truth will set us free.
Absolutely.
And freedom, you know, not work will set you free. What was that? What was
Arbeit macht frei. That was the slogan over.
Yeah, work will set you free. No, work won't set you free. Truth will, and the truth is what we need. These new Democrats, this new Congress and this new Senate to bring us to the truth. Nothing but the truth. I don't want to hear lies or cover-ups or nothing like that. I want the truth. And after I've heard the truth, I can lay these bones down, and I can rest in peace. But if there is no truth, there will be no peace. And that is what Jesus Christ has preached to us. Jesus Christ, not Jesus H. Christ, as the Republicans throwing at us, but Jesus Christ has taught us from our birth is that peace and love for your fellow man is more important than your own life. Give only and take what is yours, but do not take from others. And these
people, live simply so that others can simply live.
Yes. And yeah. Love, hey, you give, hey, when you see someone in need. Jesus said, if you see a man without a cloak or a coat, give him yours, right?
Yeah.
Take off your garment.
Give away everything you have and follow me.
Give it to the needy. Take off, just give it up and give it to the needy and then follow me. And yes, that is truth. And that's what the Republicans are afraid of, Bob. They hate the truth. They cannot stand the truth. They are filthy and they are evil. And yes, we must resist them in every sense of the word. I mean, resist them. Stand before them and tell them what they are. Just say, hey, that's enough of that. I've heard that. Leave that decent human being, that black man, that red man, that yellow man, leave him alone, because I will not tolerate it. And if you do what you keep doing to him, I will stomp you and stand for him and be with him and become his brother, his sister, or her sister, and stand with him and do not allow these people any more leeway. Don't give them another inch, because if you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. Well, by God, we won't even give them a centimeter. Period. Just stomp on them, Bob. I told you when I first met.
Well, that's what we try to do each and every night, is give them a good swift kick and a good proper stomping.
Well, you're doing fine by my reckoning. I mean, I'm listening to you, and I love you, son. I love you. I love your lady, and I pray for your papa.
Well, thank you.
I pray for him. I believe you in my heart.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you. We really appreciate it.
Not on bended knee, but in my heart, and that's where...
I don't think anybody should ever be asked to bend a knee to anyone or anything.
Yeah. No, I don't bend a knee, but my heart is with you and with your papa, and I pray in my heart that he will survive and be with you a long, long time.
I appreciate it. Bob, you have a wonderful night, all right? And a great weekend, because I won't be here tomorrow.
Hey, love to you, son. I ain't going to listen. I'll, I'll, I'll probably have to lift my own voice. And sometimes
there'll be something on here.
Huh?
There'll be something on here.
Well, the last
just not
time
me.
They ran me back at me, and that just kind of scared me a bit. Hey, I do sound a little gruff at times, but
that's all right. We love you, Bob. Got to roll.
Okay.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Dang, I hate to bring somebody on this late, but we'll see where it goes. Just a second. Too many buttons. Hey, welcome to the program. Who have I got? Hello? Oh, well. All right, rather than bring our next caller on with only a couple of minutes to go before the program goes out, we will move toward the top of the hour. You know how to get in touch with the program. This is not rocket science. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. And, of course, email comes roaring in to bob@headonradio.com. And as such, reach the program any way you feel like it. In the meantime, we're here, and we're waiting. This is the Head On Radio Network. And me, well, I'm just Bob Kincaid.
I'm trying to be less polite. I'm saying what I really think. The president's a fool. I don't want to get up early, and I wish I had a good stiff drink. I'm trying to be less polite. I want to call a spade a spade. I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave. I'm trying to be less polite. I'm trying to be less polite. I'm fed up with the Christian wrong.
This is the Quality News Network. The New York Times reports the Iraq Study Group has reached a consensus that the U.S. should gradually pull back its troops. Recommendations will be released Wednesday. The bipartisan group is expected to support direct diplomacy with Iraq's neighbors, Iran and Syria. The Bush administration is now downplaying the group's findings. The group includes former Secretary of State James Baker, former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, and former Clinton Chief of Staff Leon Panetta. Iraq's prime minister says his country's forces will be ready to take over security by June of next year. Were that the case, U.S. troops could start to withdraw. That's according to ABC News. In Ireland, doctors say former Russian prime minister Igor Gaidar appears to have been poisoned. He was giving a book reading when he fell ill the day before Putin critic Alexander Litvinenko died of radiation poisoning in London. In the UK, authorities have found at least 12 sites tainted with radioactive materials in their investigation of Litvinenko's death. Five British airline jets have now been found to contain radioactive traces. Tens of thousands of passengers on those jets have been asked to call authorities. Litvinenko, who was investigating the recent death of another Putin critic, blamed Moscow for his poisoning shortly before his death. In the Sudan, reports say hundreds of people may have been killed in fighting between Sudanese forces and rebel foes. 300 to 400 civilians have been wounded. The conflict in Sudan has killed hundreds of thousands of civilians in the last 3 years. In Iowa, former Governor Tom Vilsack kicked off his 2008 presidential campaign today. He plans a five-state tour. The southern plains and Midwest have been hit by storms today that brought snow, sleet, and freezing rain from Texas to Illinois. Parts of eastern Kansas may experience up to 12 inches of snow. According to the Justice Department, there are 7 million American adults in jail, on probation, or parole. That is a record number, equaling one in every 32 U.S. civilians. Angola, the second-largest oil producer in Africa and largest supplier of crude to China, applies next month to become a member of OPEC. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Pregnant women and those who plan to become pregnant are being warned not to take the antidepressant Paxil. A group of obstetricians said today the medication may cause birth defects. HIV/AIDS treatment will be significantly cheaper for the world's children. Former President Bill Clinton negotiated a deal with pharmaceutical companies. Worldwide, more than 40 million people are infected. The Commerce Department says October consumer spending picked up by 0.2%. Also, personal incomes rose by 0.4%. Walmart predicts its December sales will rise by only 1%. The world's largest retailer announced its November sales fell for the first time in a decade. An analyst said more than half of retailers fell short of their forecasts for the second month in a row. Microsoft Windows Vista is now available to businesses. Home users will be able to purchase the updated operating system on January 30th. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.98 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was down 5 points at 12,221. NASDAQ flat at 2431. The S&P 500 was up 1 point at 1400. You can find more at thequalitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Durin Tootin. I'm Bob. Welcome back. Fascinating stuff in that newscast. Thanks, Annabelle. My favorite line out of the top of the hour newscast? Yeah, I actually listened to him. How about that? My favorite line, the Iraq Study Group has reached the conclusion, wait for it, that the U.S. should gradually withdraw troops from Iraq. Well, duh! One, two, three, everybody, duh! We were sort of on that, you know, because you know what? If you in October 2002, if you were part of the group that said we shouldn't send them there in the first place, you won! You win! We were right! Because not sending them in the first place is a significant part of we need to get them out now. How many people are there within the sound of my voice who make minimum wage or less, who sweat and struggle through every blessed day to feed their kids, to keep clothes on their children's backs, to keep the light bill paid, to keep the internets turned on, make the house payment, pay the insurance, maybe go to a movie once in a while or rent a DVD, who could have told any of these silk-suited fools in the Iraq study group?
Yeah, it's a study group. We're going to get together over by Carol 37 in the back of the law library. We'll play a little bit of paper football and maybe a little bit of three-penny hockey. And then we're going to talk about what we're going to do about Iraq. What I think we need is a phased withdrawal, but we're not going to call it cut and run.
Jesus. How many billions of dollars did it cost the American taxpayers to get these geniuses together? And, I think we ought to get out. It's not looking so good. I guess maybe I shouldn't be too hard on them, though, because at least maybe this is the beginning of getting out. Although if you saw Dear Leader on the television today from his little meeting with Iraqi Prime Minister Maliki, howdy doody. We're not going to leave. Oh, Jesus. You know, how about we give George Bush a choice? The troops can leave or you can leave. I guess I'm just crazy. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend David from Maine has been waiting a long, long time. David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. You know, I just wanted to briefly say before I get into what I'm going to talk about tonight, the Seinfeld DVD,
yeah,
it's outselling everything. So good job, people, mentioning it over and over and over and over again. It's number 6 on Amazon, so give yourself a round of applause for that one.
Hey, I only did one night of Seinfeld.
No, I mean, but Jesse Jackson, these people who say, don't buy the Seinfeld DVD, and he said, don't buy season 7, and then I thought to myself, what about season 1 through 6? some of these people.
Yeah, don't buy season 7. That'll put it to the man.
Yeah, there you go. So what I wanted to talk about tonight is about a story that would be lost unless these two filmmakers decided to make it. And what it is, it's about the story about Miami. It's called Cocaine Cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
It's a film that's about the Miami drug trade and how it started. What they did was they went back to the beginning and how it all started, before the cocaine, the marijuana drug trades, and how it escalated from there. And what you find out in the movie is there was complicity all the way to the bank, every single bank. And the amazing thing about the story is that it's more outrageous than Scarface, it's more outrageous than The Godfather, and it's all true. And the crazy thing about it is it involves a drug trafficker named John Roberts. And
just like the Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, just like the Supreme Court. So, yeah, and it involves a MacGyver-like pilot named Mickey Monday. And they would figure out ways how to transport the cocaine and the drugs to Miami, basically. And what they started out with is they got footage of how Miami was in the 50s, and it shows this one cop car going around the city. Imagine that today. No.
Yeah.
That's not what happened. So what happens is it escalated and escalated, and because, and this is important for everybody this will give you like a kind of like primer before you see it. What's important is is that it shows you how everyone just didn't look the other way. They didn't have any federal regulations. They had no regulations on the city. None. The banks, this was before the $10,000 deposit slips. So they could literally, Bob, they could literally wheel $600 million and say, okay, take this to the Federal Reserve with no background checking, nothing. And what they did was they showed the footage. And this is something that if these two filmmakers didn't make, they showed the footage of how the story in the history of Miami was built. And if they didn't, they said the footage was literally rotting away. It was rotting away in the newsreels. And this is why. Miami does not want to ever live up, just like we will never live up to the back. That's why, people, it's important to keep record of all this historic stuff, because you never know. You never know when someone's gonna need that gap of time. And who knows? You might have grabbed the video reel footage that somebody is missing. So what they did was they took the video footage and they showed it. And they showed the reels and they pieced the story together of this hitman who was for one of the most infamous drug pin bosses. And the crazy part about it is she was more notorious and more evil than any Italian mafia was. And she was called the Black Widow. And her name was Griselda Blanco.
Griselda?
Griselda Blanco. I'm not kidding you. But and I started thinking about it, and I was like, there's a part in the movie where one of the hitmen, George Rivia Aliala, he goes, I remember going to see Scarface, and we were watching the scene on the balcony, one of the balcony scenes, and all my people and all my crew, and all his hitman crew, they said, man, you should have capped that guy. But see, it doesn't glorify the events. It shows you what happens to these people. It shows you what Miami didn't want to show you. It shows you the chainsaw murders and all that stuff. And it just literally shows you these little flashes of pictures and whatnot, just to show it's a contrast between the Miami that you see and the Miami that you don't see. The newsreel footage that they didn't want you to see, that's real distorted and everything. And they start to talk about where Miami changed drastically. And one of the catalyst moments that people didn't hear about was there was a literal ice cream truck that pulled up to a mall. I think they might have played this on CNN a little bit. It was an ice cream truck that showed up to a mall, and they were doing a drug hit. They pulled up, and they literally had, Bob, they literally had thousands of guns in this truck. And they had all these holes in the ice cream truck, and they would just start shooting at the mall. Just literally obliterating the mall, whoever was in their way. The crazy thing about it is they wanted to show how powerful and tough they were. They left all the guns on the rack in the ice cream truck. After they were done, they just got out and walked out. That's how powerful. Bob, this is important. This is why people need to realize this. If we don't have regulation, a city like that, Miami could be any city in the world without the proper regulation. And that's why it's so important we have to keep that regulation.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring up something that documents Miami, because I'm not sure if you're familiar with it or not, David, but there's a little internecine firestorm brewing in the Republican camp. Because you've heard us mention from time to time this right-wing Uber freak from Colorado by the name of Tom Tancredo.
Right. I was gonna mention that.
The guy that wants to put Mexican ladies who scrub toilets up against the wall and have them shot.
Yeah.
He came out and called Florida a third world country. Now the best part of this is that Tancredo, at the time that he made these loathsome remarks, you know, because as an American, I believe in everybody being Americans who are in America, you know, in the Western Hemisphere. It's all America, isn't it?
Right.
But anyway, Tom Tancredo was attending an immigration conference at a swanky Palm Beach resort. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of those silk stocking affairs.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes out and he says,
Now, look at what has happened to Miami. It's become a third-world country. You just pick it up and take it and move it someplace. You'd never know you were in the United States of America. You'd certainly say you're in a third-world country.
You know, Bob, you know what's funny about that is people just that stupid don't understand if it wasn't for a lot of the Colombian participation and a lot of the Cubans and all of that and all that place would have never risen. It would have been just basically
it was a sleepy little resort town in the 30s.
Right. It would have been a sleepy little resort town. There wouldn't have been that much of an economy. It would have been like just not even on the map. It wouldn't have been one of the hottest cities in the world.
And it is that. I mean, apparently Tom Tancredo gets his knowledge of Miami by watching old reruns of Crockett and Tubbs. Lest we forget, he is the first announced, isn't he, presidential candidate on the Republican ticket for 08, Tom Tancredo?
Yeah.
Didn't he announce?
I don't know, but
he's just such an obvious fascist freak. I mean, he hates everybody who doesn't look like him. You know, and him with a name that ends in a vowel, whose grandparents came over on the boat. You know, it's amazing how you can get from a grandson of immigrant to bigot in something that approaches the speed of light.
And you know what's funny, Bob, about this whole terrorism and this whole thing? If you look at a parallel, Miami was like a mini Baghdad in the 80s, and they were crying. And in the footage, they talked to people, they talked to some of the cops, and he said, I don't understand. They were literally upset. This is why this is such a good movie to see, and I recommend it to everyone. It's called Cocaine Cowboys, by the way. That's my second plug of the night. But
yeah.
He says, I don't understand why the feds, why the reserves, why they didn't bring in, any of the extra reinforcements. So we cried and cried for years and years. And he said, and they would not listen to us. And you know, you start to piece it together, and you know why they wouldn't listen to him. You know why? Because they were wheeling out millions and millions of dollars to the banks, shipping it right to the Federal Reserve. That's why.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, when you watch the movie, you start to see all of the things. It didn't even make sense. I mean, they showed like millions and millions of dollars on dollies rolling in the bank, and I'm like, nobody's making that in a week.
That sounds like the tarmac outside the Baghdad airport, you know, where we carry in $9 billion in cash. Oh, damn, it's gone.
It's a mini version of that, right, exactly. And this is the problem with it: no regulation, no complicity, basically accountability. All of these factors, they just keep adding up. And it keeps getting darker and darker until someone sees the light, stands up, and goes, wait a minute, this is what's going on. This and this and that and this is what we need to do. There needs to be a leader in the situation in the Middle East, in the Baghdad, wherever. They need to realize what is going on and stop denying it. And until we do that, Bob, we're going to get nowhere.
Well, I think that's probably a fair proposition.
And, you know, to me, it's just everything is, you know, everything is important to put it in perspective. When you watch this movie, you realize how things get out of control so easily for a sleep town, for a sleeper city, basically. And you realize that in the end, they have a good moral in the movie. They come to terms that it wasn't worth it. But you know the crazy thing about it is these traffickers were so separated from where they were living. They still think, you know, we didn't have anything to do with that. That was they're passing the blame to someone else or something because they say, well, I never shot anybody. I never killed anybody. I was just making what I thought was a profitable business. And you know, the interesting thing about it is Miami rebirthed itself through Miami Vice. Because the weird thing about it is when Miami Vice would do film locations, they would rebuild the sets and they would repaint the city. So the way Miami Vice was portrayed on TV,
is
they conveyed it to the public. So You're mixed in, and you see a distorted of how Miami, how they think Miami really was, and then they turned it into that way.
Yeah, the fiction became the fact.
Right, the fiction became the fact, exactly.
All right, well, David, good to hear from you.
No problem, Bob.
Have yourself a good evening.
All right, later.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our good friend David calling from Maine. I'll tell you what, take a quick break, and we'll come back after that and back to the phones. Your call's welcome at 877-443-2366. I'm Bob.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
Sunny side down, and I still think I'm.
Welcome back. I'm Bob. About 25 minutes past the hour for this Thursday evening edition of the program. As I mentioned, I won't be in the chair tomorrow evening. I'll be on the road. And our good friends Bruce Birch and I believe John Fox will be joining in sort of a, I don't know, it's like a Fourth Estate reunion tomorrow evening from 6 p.m. Eastern to 9 to cover quite ably and well in my absence, and I am sincerely grateful to them for doing so. In the meantime, let's go on back to the phones. Our good friend Albert calls in from Wisconsin. Albert, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Bob, this is Albert. How
hey,
are you?
I'm good. You?
I'm good. Well, I come to you with a heavy heart, but I'm also calling you from space. Wisconsin is in the grips of some of the coldest weather I've felt since last winter.
Oh, the brutal stuff has begun, has it?
Yeah, no snow yet, but it's too cold, so it just kind of pretty much is, it's like, you know, you got to come out and hold your breath.
Ick.
Vacuum.
How cold is it?
It right now it's about 5.
5?
5.
Degrees?
Degrees.
Ick. I don't like that stuff, and that means
yeah.
It's headed my way.
Yeah, I drive in, well, yeah, it's coming down. It comes down from Canada, and it kind of, yeah, it really hammers us here in Wisconsin, so you got to have some thick blood and some nice, delicious, well-crafted beverages.
Exactly. Exactly, because they say it thins the blood, but it also warms the blood.
It does, and, you know, when you got friends that, you know, if their blood's thin, and then they exude more heat, and you're exuding more heat, and everybody kind of, I've got some friends coming over, I'm cooking dinner right now, and but that's not what I, you know, we'll do recipes another day.
Okay.
It's kind of mind-blowing. What is going on in this world that we're sitting here looking, and, oh, just real quick before I really put
yeah.
that, I'm going to get to the poisoning, radiation poisoning. What? Anyway.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to that thing yet. But I don't. Does the government of Great Britain realize that that Vladimir Putin has perpetrated a radiological attack on them?
I am so kind of. I'm confused. I understand. I mean, I'm not kind of confused, but you know what I'm saying. This is very odd, and we sitting here looking at, and now it's two. I mean,
yeah.
One, you know, you could say, oh, well, he was playing with something he shouldn't have played with, or who knows.
Well, some of the stuff I'm reading, Albert, suggests that Litvinenko was about to drop was in the position to drop the dime on a bunch of atrocities in Chechnya, and that it wasn't necessarily his investigation of the murder of the reporter. Remember, there's not two, there's three.
Yeah.
Because it was the lady who was the reporter who was investigating, who got bumped off, and Litvinenko was investigating that and got bumped off, and now it turns out this guy named Gaidar got whacked as well.
That is right. You have to forgive me. We just had a major loss here, but...
No, I'm very sorry.
Thank you.
You guys okay?
Yeah, everybody's okay. I'll tell you, you know, we are firm believers in taking the negative and connecting it to the positive. Because when you connect negative to positive, you create a current. And that current is really all we have. You can't store love. You got to let it flow. And we all have come together, my friends, and I mean, I have made new friends, and it's a devastating loss, but at the same time, it's a bountiful gain. You know, I've lost a giant tree, but I've gained a whole forest. So it is a good thing.
Well, that's a good attitude.
On that. It's what we've got to do. But just real quick, I mean, your last caller, David,
mm-hmm.
talking about, you know, the drug trade and such, and sort of skirted one of the main things is the Alphabet Agency throughout history, and throughout history in terms of world governments and, you know, the Dutch, the English, you name it. And there is provable, I mean, historical timeline of major government involvement in the underground drug trade. They want it underground. Also in the news outlet, it said 1 in 38 Americans is now involved with the criminal justice system. 1 in 38.
That's a bunch.
That's a lot. That's, I mean, we're,
And it, well, it certainly keeps the probation officers and the parole officers and the judges and the prosecutors and the cops and the on, and it, it, keep, it keeps them in business, and universities that that are out there hustling criminal justice programs.
Mm-hmm.
It's good business, this criminality.
Oh, it is. It always has been. But you know, we got to remember, you know, and that's another thing we were talking about. We got to get the truth of the matter. I mean, we have to be willing to accept it. You know, we have to be willing to accept it. I mean, you know, CIA, we need these people.
We do?
We do? I didn't know that.
That's what I'm asking you.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know. No, we don't. Absolutely not. When do they get right? Nothing. They get what we want. They get what they want us to know.
You know, not just that, but it's the stuff they get wrong.
Well, I don't even know if it's so much wrong. I think it's just the
creep. Do you remember they missed out on the Pakistani going nuclear? They missed that.
I don't believe that.
They took... I do. They're incompetent. I mean, we're talking about an agency that was expressly created out of the old OSS in the post-World War II era. It was expressly created to be spy versus spy, straight out of Mad Magazine, against the Soviet Union. And the CIA is chock-a-block full of experts on the Soviet Union. There ain't no Soviet Union anymore.
It's also chock-full of Nazis.
Yeah, well, in its earliest incarnations, you're damn right it was.
Operation Paperclip.
That's the thing that drives me nuts about the Iraq Study Group and this line out of the top of the hour news. Iraq Study Group has reached the conclusion that the U.S. should gradually withdraw its troops from Iraq. You know, I'm sending a bill to the White House because
yeah.
I came up with that 4 years ago.
Yeah, you and I we're 10 percenters. We're 10 percenters,
yeah.
And we. Yeah, I mean, I'm same with Afghanistan. You know, Ahmed with his goat herder had nothing to do with 9/11, and he and his family do not deserve to be vaporized.
No, not at all.
Afghanistan is the hidden little thing, the hidden little stepchild right now on the war on terror, where, you know, even like the Al Frankens of the world will say, well, I was not for Iraq, but I was for Afghanistan. Now, I wasn't even for Afghanistan.
Now let me back up, okay? Because I'm a peacenik and everything, but I really have a loathing for mean, violent, rotten people. I love that old, that very simple bumper sticker. It's one of the few that our side has that really works. Mean people suck.
Yep.
You know what? The Taliban were a bunch of mean jerks. And I'll be honest. This is just me and a moment of little rottenness, Albert. Back when they started blowing up the Buddha statues, the 800,000, 1,200-year-old, 1,600-year-old statues of the Buddha at Bamiyan, I wanted to blow them up.
I agree.
The Kabul Museum was an amazing place that housed profound cultural realities that spoke to the broad spectrum of the human experience.
And
they took stuff out in the streets and danced on it and said, Allah doesn't like it. Blah, 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 blah. And you know what? Screw them. Kill them. I know that's not very peacenik of me, and I apologize.
Hang on a second, Bob.
Yeah.
I understand. Like, you know, when you destroy human history, when you destroy that, I mean, it's not just taking it from, you know, the Afghani people. It's taking it from all of us.
Yeah.
Taken away from our understanding. I mean, like, and that's also, you know, that's also a lot of things. I mean, government's doing that to this day.
You know, when you beat women to death with tire irons because they dared show an unshaven ankle, you don't have much right to be included in civil society.
However, what have we put there?
Same thing, different day.
Same thing, but, and except now, we have our pipeline.
Yeah.
And now... Every year, the first year they came back with the opium, poppy crop, it was 200% increase over the last record year.
Yeah.
Then every year since then, it has gone up. It went up 400% over last time. 700% was just this last year.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing with you, and I acknowledge that by saying what I just said, that I'm sort of getting in touch with my inner Neanderthal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the fundamentalists. You know, I wouldn't. Well, dare I say this? I wouldn't care if somebody tire ironed Pat Robertson and the blind Mullah Omar in the same stroke.
Well, and there I have to agree with you. But you know, it's never those guys. It's not the Pat Robertson.
No, it's the goat herders.
It's you and I.
You know, it's Pat Tillman who got suckered into a patriotic frenzy and winds up standing on a hill yelling, "Friendly, friendly, stop firing, damn it, stop firing, friendly." And we still can't get the truth about that.
Well, that's 5 investigations now.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. I know, honey. I know.
Poor baby.
She was washing dishes for Daddy, and she got some soap in her eye.
Oh, that hurts.
Go and get this washed out. But hey, I love you. Take care.
Thanks, Albert.
See you another day.
All right. Take care. Hang in there, brother.
Always.
Later.
Later.
I know that what I just said is offensive to people, and I know it's wrong, and I know it's rotten. I am not pro-war, but I am really, really, really anti. Oh boy, I can think of a million words I'd like to use, none of which I really should. I feel the same way about the. Well, as a for instance, there was an announcement in the last couple of days that something that was found on the Mediterranean seafloor in a Roman galley wreck, the 38 or so hand-tooled bronze gears, that they finally figured out what it was. And it was something called the Antikythera device. It's a computer. Really, honest to God, for a computer from 150 BC that probably in its working lifetime crashed less often than the one I use. Okay, I'm being a smart aleck. That is the cultural legacy of all of us. The Tibetan Book of the Dead is the cultural legacy of all of us. Even the Old Testament is a cultural legacy of all of us. And when you go around and you actively destroy it because you think that your invisible cloud critter that doesn't like it, and that you're the one who heard it, and that you've got to act on it, and you need to ball bat that woman over that ankle, you've reached a level where that's not a tolerance issue. No human being should tolerate that. Just as no human being should tolerate what was done at the beginning of the Iraq War when we diverted troops to the oil ministry and let people run rampant through the Iraqi Department of Antiquities, where the 5,000-year-old clay tablets were thrown out in the streets. Bye-bye! That should not be tolerated either. And you don't tolerate it when somebody spray paints Semper Fi, not even Semper Fi for the love of God, Semper Fi, on the walls of Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon. I mean, I'm a peaceful guy. I'm a real peace-loving fella. But it's these people who are trying to destroy what little good we can find out of the legacy of humanity. It's not the bad they want to destroy, it's the good. The people who live between the rivers, between the Tigris and Euphrates, they're 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 generations back ancestors had a hand in developing the very idea of law and culture and rules by which people could live as human beings and not simply apes out of the trees, although maybe that's being a little rough on the apes. The people between the rivers had profound society and culture at a time when the people who led to the creation of the Bible were still fighting with the jackals for what the vultures wouldn't eat. And beginning in March 2003, we did everything in our power to destroy that legacy. You know, if you Google the Code of Hammurabi, you'll find a text of it. And I've read it in the past, and it is fascinating. And you can't come away from reading that without realizing that you are reading the labors of generations of human beings who wanted a better way. And there is a direct line from the Code of Hammurabi down through the Roman law codes, through the Code of Justinian, through the Napoleonic Code, through development of what was called in Old England the Common Law, through Hobbes, through Locke, to the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States. It is a direct line that has nothing to do, incidentally, with the Ten Commandments. And that is, and it is all of that that is under attack. I wonder how the people of Great Britain feel to know that they have been nuked. Really, literally. How many British Airways aircraft now have been found to contain contamination by some of the most deadly radioactive material known to man, polonium-210? And a coffee shop, a Starbucks, a sushi restaurant. This stuff is... And, of course, the British authorities are doing everything in their power to say, well, do not panic. There's a very low likelihood of any sort of danger to an average, the average person. Meanwhile, they walk through the British Airways jet with the little Geiger counter and go, click, 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 click. Why? Well, how interesting. Not because some unhappy Muslim decided to take his revenge. You know, we've been told that the dirty bomb is, by God, going to come from the Middle East. Oh, you know, they have a 14 years ago, they bought some suitcase bombs, and they're just sitting on them, waiting for the right time, and they're going to blow up Poughkeepsie. Huh. I'll be damned. Turns out the dirty radiation's being spread by the Putin regime. What a telling thing it turns out to have been when... Bush was where was it? Russia? Was it Russia? When he said to Putin, when he said to Vladimir Putin, we hope you'll have a democracy too. And Putin said, if you have in mind what you're talking about in Iraq, no, thank you, George. Vladimir Putin doesn't want democracy at all, and he is willing to kill and sicken ordinary, everyday, working stiffs in Great Britain to get at his political enemies. Heh. I'll be damned, huh? Doesn't that just make you want to eat dirt and run rabbits? It's not the Muslims! No, it's the guy that George Bush looked at and said, I looked into his soul, and we're soulmates, and we can communicate together, and I believe he's earnest. Jesus, he's the former head of the KGB. And he's actively killing people inside the sovereign British state, there on the sceptered isle, and all that other lovely stuff that Shakespeare wrote. That England. England got nuked by a totalitarian fascist who is deemed to be a good buddy of the President of the United States. That's a real screamer, isn't it? Let's go to the phones and see who's here. Hey, you're head on. Welcome to the program.
Bob.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good, Ed. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I was just listening, but I just was listening to some news here. One of the preachers, a conservative, invited Obama to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rick Warren of, what is it, Saddleback Church?
Mm-hmm. And he's got like 20,000 members, and now they're taking a petition around, and they emphasize the white congregation, plus other preachers, are taking a petition to get him stopped. But tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock, there's going to be four of them, and I can't remember all their names. I think he's going to be one of them involved in it on CNN. And I was going to mention that to you. But I enjoyed your conversation on all the subjects, and I just can't get over how far ahead you predicted the wheels. This was the terminology you used. The wheels is coming off the Bush wagon. And that was probably 3 or 4 months ago. And it looks like that he's pulling them off himself. The newest thing here, at least me being updated on it, is the break between the British and us. They called, what's the leader over there? I can't think of his name now, right off the top of my head. But anyway, they...
Tony Blair?
Yeah, they called him the poodle.
Yeah.
So, when he gets out, he better hang on to his wife and his dog, because that looks like all he's going to have.
Well, nah, he'll wind up with a board of directors seat on the Carlyle Group, Ed. That's how they reward good behavior.
Well, I'm telling you, it's the stuff that's... It just gets more disgusting every day.
Yes, it does.
And I can't believe that they're talking about sending so many thousand more troops over there. I mean, that's, I don't know if you've heard that, but you probably have the latest, but they're talking about sending 16,000 more people over
there. Well, that's what McCain's running around and babbling about, Ed. We need to send 20,000. 20,000 isn't going to make a difference. We might make a difference if we sent 750,000. But we can't do that, and it would be wrong to do that.
It's my opinion that just gives those people more, it'd be different if they fought wars like they used to. That's just going to give them more targets to shoot at. And that's an opinion.
No, well, it's a valid one.
Yeah, but I am so against even the meek, humble way that the Democrats are, and believe me, I'm 100% Democrat, but there's still a bunch of mealy mouse up there that will not take a stand to get those boys back out into Kuwait or one of those neighboring countries that are friendly and quit getting them knocked off.
Well, see, I'm even more hardcore than that, Ed. I don't want them in Kuwait. I don't want them in Qatar. I don't want them in Bahrain. I don't want them in Saudi Arabia. I don't want them in Turkey or pulled back to the Kurdish north of Iraq. I want them home.
Well, I want that, but if to get them out of there and keep any more of them from getting killed is better than what they've got now, and it's just so. And people, I know their vote showed what they wanted, but there's still not enough of heat put on Congress to take an uproar. I mean, there seems to be like that they have to compromise a little bit with George Bush. And,
don't have much stomach for compromise right now, Ed.
I don't either. It's like you said, the only thing in the middle of the road is dead game or a yellow line. And I'm disgusted with the, and maybe it's a front right now, I hope. But,
well, see, what bothers me about withdrawing them, and it's what makes me incredibly suspicious, Ed, is that if we withdraw American troops to some nearby country, then George will have them there handy and basically just restaged if he decides to invade Iran or if he decides to hot it up again with Iraq. I want them all the way home, and I want them home, because once they're home, it's going to be harder for him to use them somewhere else. If I could pass a law tomorrow that said he could no longer commit troops to anything, I would do it. Because you don't let crazy people have that kind of control. and I'm convinced he's insane.
I'm convinced that there's something mentally, that he's mentally disturbed in some way. I don't know, you know, I'm certainly not a psychiatrist by any means, and don't know how, but a raving idiot can see that there's something bad wrong with what's going on, and the violence that keeps getting worse and worse. And I have to admire Colin Powell for coming out like he did, even though he's still a stiff-necked Republican. But, you know, he basically said that we're in a no-win situation. And it's just so discouraging for our boys. And the thing that bothers me, there's not enough people speaking out. There's nobody crying except the people that lose their sons and their grandsons over there. So that's,
well, the way I saw it put, and I thought it very well put, the United States military is fighting Iraq. The United States people are not.
And that's very well put.
You know, that we've got countless scores of Republican mothers and fathers who are pro-war because they know that their children aren't in it. And members of Congress and members of the administration and functionaries at the Justice Department and at the Defense Intelligence Agency and at the National Security Agency and the CIA and the FBI, and they're behind the troops because their kids aren't one.
Yeah, well, I think it was put plain enough when the politician out of Virginia,
Jim Webb,
sort of told Bush it was really none of his business what that done me more, and said he got the chill, you know. If I got a warm from anything from George Bush, I would have to go get myself checked, see what was wrong, what brought that on. Because I hate his stinking guts, you know, him and the whole crew up there. And I've never felt so strong against anyone in my whole life until I've seen this crew that's come in up there that, and they call it the compassionate group, that at one time they called herself compassionate Republicans. That's like old that fellow from Georgia, that sided up with them. But anyway,
Zell Miller, my God, I do everything in my power to forget Zell Miller, and doggone it, Ed, you just brought him back to life inside my brain.
I'd rather be put on a gut wagon than to be in the same vehicle with him. But we've got a lot of them like that. That's that disgusting. And but I thought I'd tip you off, and I know you like to analyze and digest the news half the night. You're about like I am. But in the morning at 6 o'clock on CNN, they've got a group that's coming on there. I'm going to see how this.
Well, I love the fact that all these lily white evangelicals are up in arms over Barack Obama coming to speak, and they say it's because, well, you know, he endorses abortion,
yeah,
and he's pro gay marriage, and that's not our, those aren't our values as evangelicals. Well, you know, the man's also a Christian.
Well,
and there's not a blessed thing in the New Testament about gay marriage or about abortion.
Well, I'm not that well studied on that, but I know that he's a more of a humanitarian than about any of those preachers.
Sure.
And it's showing up what they are. You know, look at how many of them. They're so stiff-necked, they ain't got room to bend a little bit. They'll break. They break.
Well, the sooner they break, the happier I am, Ed.
Yeah. Well, you know what? There's a lot of them going to have blood on their hands at the end because of the people that they keep out of church. Because I don't want to go hear none of them. Closest thing I would listen to would be Charles Stanley or Billy Graham if he was able. I just don't have any use for the, you know, you've mentioned every one of them at one time or another. and I listened to the one on CNN from North Carolina. I don't remember names very well, but the one that told them if they didn't vote for George Bush, it wouldn't welcome in his church. And
yeah, that was, yeah, East Waynesboro Baptist Church. I remember that very well.
And they had him on there. You talking about a person that equates out to George Bush's standard. He was George Bush all over again. So that's what we got in the churches anymore, and there's somebody going to have to answer because you can't go to a church that where there's a perfect congregation that hasn't been involved in something that the preacher disagrees with.
Well, there's a preacher cooling his heels in San Diego County, California right now, Ed, who was busted coming back into the United States from Tijuana. He's being held on a murder rap. He bumped off a millionaire farmer that he was trying to steal his fortune.
I haven't heard that one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's all over the place. It goes without saying that they can't be trusted, these so-called religious right people. You know, whether it's Ted Haggard out there pursuing a prostitute and snorting meth, or Jim Baker, or Jimmy Swaggart, I have sinned against you. They're crooks. My God, they're crooks.
Cried his way right out of it. First time, anyway. First two times, I think.
And I'll tell you, that family, I'd much rather listen to Jerry Lee Lewis. I mean, that's just me, but you know, far better piano player in my book.
Right. Okay, well.
Ed, you have yourself a good night, okay?
And you too, Bob, and thanks. Thanks for the job you're doing.
My pleasure. And thank you for your participation and your kind words. You take care.
All righty.
Bye now. Don't know where it went. Reckon it went where the candle flame goes when it goes out, but we have shot through another hour. You know, this is, for me, Agnes and I were just sitting around talking a little bit. What a life-changing experience this has been for us and continues to be for us. And if you get out of it one-tenth of what we get, then you know what we're talking about. It's just magnificent. All these voices, all these common dreams and common thoughts, and knowing, simply breaking the barrier of the aloneness that the right wing did every bit in its power to try to convince us of. My God, there's so much more of us than there are of them. We can whip them, you know that? We really can. Final hour coming up. If you want to jump in into the program, you're welcome to do so. 877-443-2366. 877-4 Head On. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid. News is next.
Once that you've decided on a killing, first you make a stone of your heart. And if you find that your hands are still willing, then you can turn a murder into art. There really isn't any for bloodshed. Just do it with a little more finesse. If you can slip a tablet into someone's coffee, then it avoids an awful lot. Murder by numbers, 1, 2, 3, it's as easy to learn as your ABC.
This is the Quality News Network. Authorities have now found at least 12 London sites tainted with radioactive materials in their investigation of the death of Moscow critic Alexander Litvinenko. The FBI is now involved. Four British airline jets have been found to contain radioactive traces, airplanes in which Litvinenko's alleged murderers traveled. Two Russian jets are also contaminated. Tens of thousands of passengers on those jets have been asked to call authorities. Litvinenko, who was investigating the recent death of another Putin critic, blamed Moscow for his poisoning shortly before he died. In Ireland, doctors say former Russian Prime Minister Igor Gaidar appears to have been poisoned. He was presenting a book reading when he fell ill the day before Alexander Litvinenko died of radiation poisoning in London. The Associated Press today revealed the federal government has been assigning a computer-generated risk number to travelers. The government reportedly has been doing this for 4 years without public notice. Citizens are not permitted to see or challenge their files. The assessments will be kept on file for at least 40 years. The New York Times reports the Iraq study group has reached a consensus that the U.S. should gradually pull back its troops. Recommendations will be released Wednesday. The bipartisan group is expected to support direct diplomacy with Iraq's neighbors, Iran and Syria. The Bush administration is now downplaying the group's findings. The group includes former Secretary of State James Baker, former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, and former Clinton Chief of Staff Leon Panetta. Iraq's prime minister said today his country's forces would be ready to take over security by June of next year. Were that the case, U.S. troops could start to withdraw. In the International War Crimes Tribunal, the Bosnian Serb general who orchestrated the Sarajevo siege has been sentenced to life in prison. The 1,000-day siege was the longest in military history. More than 12,000 civilians, many of them children, were murdered. The southern plains and Midwest have been hit by storms today that brought snow, sleet, and freezing rain from Texas to Illinois. Parts of eastern Kansas may experience up to 12 inches of snow. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Hugh Hauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking. Here's a guy who not only banks at the bank, he helped build the bank building.
Yes, sir.
Do you find the fact that it's a local bank appealing?
Yes, that's just it. It was the local people in the community that originally started the bank, and that's why I got involved.
It's a local bank with big bank benefits. It's part of a network of banks. Does
yes.
that mean anything to you?
Absolutely. Having a bank that can handle a big project really helps because some banks aren't tailored to handle big business, and they can handle the big business for sure. They have no limitations to what they can do for your business.
I do my business banking and my personal banking with them.
Both.
Absolutely.
You're double dipping.
You bet.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
New Canadian research has found that sitting up straight is almost as harmful to your back as slouching forward in your chair. Both positions were shown on MRIs to lead to potentially harmful disc compression. Target beat Wall Street forecasts, as did Federated Department Stores. The retail picture has been mixed. Pier 1 Imports and Sharper Image reported double-digit declines in November. Microsoft Windows Vista is now available to businesses. Home users will be able to purchase the updated operating system on January 30th. Financial software maker Intuit, which makes TurboTax and Quicken programs, will spend $1.35 billion to acquire banking software company Digital Insight. The Labor Department reported an unexpectedly large increase in the number of Americans filing for unemployment benefits. Last week, that amount was up 34,000. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.89 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was down 5 points at 12,221. The NASDAQ flat at 2431. S&P 500 up 1 at 1400. And gold traded at $653.90 an ounce. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund, and it's 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeedy. So glad to have you along. This is the end of my week as I know it. I won't be in the chair tomorrow evening. It will be capably filled by our good friend and compatriot Bruce Birch, as well, I think, as by, at least during some part of the time, our good friend from Sydney, Australia, John Fox. So be nice to them. Make sure they get plenty to talk about, plenty to interact, plenty of you to interact with. You know, it's always more fun when you participate, because this is a participatory medium. We can sit here and babble for hours and hours on end, but it's the nature of what we are trying to create and invent here, namely conversation radio, radio that is unhindered and unhamstrung by the need to respond to some AM station's automation protocols in the middle of nowhere. We don't have to do that, so we can have extended conversation. And I hope that that is as valuable to you as we feel it is here on this end. So you know the phone number. Make use of it if you so desire. Right now, waiting patiently for quite a while, has been our good friend Sarge from Southern Mississippi. Sarge, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
To follow up on what you're saying, Head On, Nova M, man, the value that such has is just unspeakable. Because, like, here I am in South Mississippi in a conservative dominated area and a hardcore religious right community, and even during the election campaign there was no Air America, there was no Head On, there was no Nova M, there was nothing, and I had to just dig and dig all the time to get what information I could, and I found so much I was lacking. And then when you take, like, after Katrina, Mike Malloy made it tolerable for me, because there I was sitting in the dark. I hadn't heard news in a week, and I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know how my family was, my sister. I didn't know any of that. And I hadn't seen a newspaper in a week, and I couldn't get any news. And I picked up the telephone, I called into Malloy,
and you connected. Yeah.
And that just, and all of a sudden, it all started making sense to me, why we hadn't seen a newspaper other than a little local one.
Right.
And, the value of such an operation as Horn or any of is far more valuable than I guess probably most people would really understand. It's because there's that certain feeling that you get, even if it's bad news. It's like I told Malloy that night, even though I know it's bad news, and even though it just makes me sick on my stomach to hear what you're saying, I need to know. And it answered questions for me, and I started seeing more. If it hadn't been for liberal talk that night, I would have still been in the dark, more than just, without electricity. And so, it is a service, and it's something that I wish liberals would get behind and support with their money, with their participation, or whatever it might be. Of course, now, like tomorrow night, the last hour, I'm not going to be listening. I'm going to be tuned into the USM game.
Well, there are priorities in this world, and I understand that is one of them.
Well, this is only the fifth time in 11 years we've had a chance at a conference title. So,
yeah. Tomorrow would have been a really exciting day for me or Saturday would have been a really exciting day for me if my beloved Mountaineers hadn't mailed it in last Saturday against Florida Directional.
Yeah, I hear you. And I tell you what, that coach from South Florida, I don't care for him. That's one smart alecky.
Yeah, but I think he's pretty good because he's beaten everybody you're supposed to beat in the Big East. He beat Louisville last year and beat them bad.
Well,
beat us this year. And it's a program that's only 10 years old. Oh, my God, we're doing the sports thing again, Sarge.
Well, he is good, but he's also a first-class asshole.
Well, he may, really? A football coach? That? No.
Well, I used to coach, so, you know.
I think the University of Alabama should go after him.
I'd like to see him go somewhere, anywhere, just as long as he don't come to see USA. I've done had a bait of him. Because, I mean, we beat him all, I think, one or two times we beat him. But he just really, when he'd come into town, he would be a total obnoxious freak. And when we'd go down there, you talk about cheating. Good gracious. That guy could cheat worse than any of them I ever saw. But anyway,
I don't think they were cheating last Saturday. They just flat beat us.
Well, that happens too.
Yeah, they just went, hey, is this yours? You know, and handed us our rear end.
Yeah, that happens. I hope
so. You know, with any luck at all, you know, at this point, my Mountaineers are fighting for the right not to go to the toilet bowl or some low rent bowl, you know, maybe in Shreveport or something. That's going to piss off the people in Shreveport. we had delusions of actually playing on New Year's Day. Now we'll be lucky to play a week before New Year's Day.
Us in the Liberty Bowl.
Yeah, it's amazing how, yeah, the Liberty Bowl, that's a cold place.
At Memphis.
Yeah, at that time of year, that is a freezing cold bowl game to go to.
Oh, man, I better not get started.
Let's not get started.
I can tell you a story.
Now, but you know, what you were saying earlier, Sarge, I read a lot of stuff after the 2004 elections, things like, well, obviously liberal talk does not work because it didn't change the outcome of the elections. Well, you know what? Look at what just happened in 2006. The more that progressive conversation grows, the greater the opportunity we have to create community, and in doing so to have an outcome or have an impact on the discussion and the debate of these political topics. I mean, there's so many stories out there that the right wing simply not only will not but cannot talk about because there's such poison to them, and that, you know, that leaves the field open for me, for Mike, Randy, and for the people who participate in the programs like you, Sarge.
Well, you know, I was really astounded for a while. I'm getting kind of used to it now, but after Mike went off the air, I got all kinds of emails, you know, and people had related to me and talking to Victor Lopez, you know, and Victor said, Sarge, you just don't realize how many people know your name out there. And I said,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, probably 10 or 20. And he said,
1,000.
Oh, man. You know, but it is reaching people. And when you hear the Iranian president say the other day, and correctly, he said it correctly. I can't disagree with him. When he said George Bush needs to take care of his own people, like in the Katrina area, I can't help but wonder.
Well, how embarrassing is it that the president of Iran can now lecture the United States?
Yeah, and
about how we respond to tragedy and the needs of the people who are beset thereby. That's embarrassing.
I can't help but wonder if he heard that on liberal talk, or somebody, one of his people heard it and said, hey, they're still having trouble over there with that.
Oh, God, don't say that, or Bill O'Reilly will come down on us and say, oh, you're helping our enemies.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You know, one thing about our conservative mindset, and, of course, I know a little bit about them living down here, like, I went in the bank the other day, and I make no secret, I make less than $550 a month to live on. That's all I get, and I'm maxed out. That's as much as I can get, you know. So I went in the bank, and this woman, the same one that told me, well, the Lord will take care of it, she said, no, I don't see how y'all get by on that kind of money, you know, because with the woman that lives here and myself put together, we managed to bring in $900-something a month, and that's what we live on. And she said, I don't see how y'all make it. And yet she's one of these same people that will gripe because she heard somebody got food stamps and they shouldn't have. And then she'll want to...
Or she thinks they shouldn't have.
Yeah, that's true. I ought to restate that because you're absolutely right. And but she's the same one that would raise holy hell about it and be so indignant that somebody was taking advantage of the system. And yet at the same time, they'll see people forced into poverty. I'm forced into it because of my situation, because of... I can't count on the VA to take care of me. I can't count on I can't do the work that I'm like my dad was. My disability has cost me everything, and I'm forced to live in this kind of income level because of nut brains like that. And then they'll go to their church on Sunday and they'll sing, oh, how I love Jesus, and then at the same time they'll spit right in his face, if there is such a thing. And that is the conservative mindset, and you never will get them to face reality of what poverty really is, even though they can see it around them. The family I grew up in, we thought somebody was really poor if they only had one car. You know, oh, they're poor. They only got one new car. And that's their mindset. They just cannot see beyond their own nose. And I don't know. That's why they can't be leaders. They don't have any empathy for anybody. They don't have any forethought. And as far as a troop getting killed, well, you know, that comes with war. And yet they won't send their own son or daughter or whatever.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, and I live around these people, and I swear sometimes I get so mad I just want to pack up and leave because I cannot stand it. Especially when I hear something like what happened on WLOX TV, where it was the day that Hitler rose to power. This guy got up and he gave an announcer on one of the morning shows, he gave a Nazi salute and he started laughing and he said, today is the day that Hitler rose to power, and gives a salute and starts laughing. And he sits down and the female host, that's so funny. And so a friend of mine called and asked about it, and they told him, said, well, you're the only one that's complained, so I don't think it bothered anybody.
Jesus.
So, I mean.
Yeah, I know.
How do you
I know.
I'm going to let you go. Bye.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks, Sarge. You have a great evening, and have a great weekend.
See how the Eagles do.
Yeah. Go Golden Eagles, man.
Okay, bye-bye.
We'll see you later. Our good friend Sarge in southern Mississippi. A little something to share with you. Don't know if you've heard this or not. This is, it's about a day old. It's out of the Independent from the UK. Certainly not from any American news source, because we don't, you know, what are we? Did you see the list, the free speech list? We're 128th or something like that. Let me see. Hang on a minute. I got it right here. 53rd. We have dropped to 53rd place in terms of free speech in the world. So don't be looking for this story in American newspapers. Five young girls. Remember, let's do a little prologue here. Da-da-da. Hang on a minute, just a minute. We'll get there. Yeah, there it is. Remember this?
I'm
That's fucked up.
Here. Can you see him?
I can see him, sir. This kid's running forever.
Come on.
He's chasing it, man.
Yeah, you remember that. That's the audio of a video we talked about a few nights ago of American soldiers taunting a little Iraqi boy with water. So let's follow up with this from the Independent of the United Kingdom. Five young girls were among six Iraqis killed by U.S. forces on Tuesday after troops used tanks and machine guns to attack what they said was a house occupied by insurgents. You know, Iraqis who fight Americans. Iraqis who live in Iraq who fight Americans who don't belong in Iraq. Fighting broke out in the city of Ramadi, considered a stronghold of the anti-U.S. insurgency, after a U.S. patrol discovered a roadside bomb in the Hamaniya section of the city. The military said, as the patrol worked to remove the bomb, two insurgents opened fire on them from the nearby house. The soldiers fired back with tanks and machine guns. Talk about swatting a fly with a sledgehammer. When they later entered the house, they found the bodies of the little girls. A sixth female was apparently also wounded but declined treatment. From us? After you just killed the other five little girls? No. I'll pass on the treatment. The treatment tends to be lethal. Soldiers found the body of one man, presumed to have been one of the two suspected insurgents, running into the house. Huh? Tough journalism. A statement from the U.S. military said the body of the other man seen running into the house may have been removed by other fighters. Quote, put down your dinner if you're having supper. Quote, in a very tragic way, today reminds us that insurgents' actions throughout Iraq are felt by all, said military spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Brian Salas. Efforts are underway to offer available assistance to surviving family members. Remember, they hate us for our freedoms. Which would appear to include the freedom to not have five little girls in your family machine gunned to death. Of course, I know what the right-wing response to that is. Well, you know, that's the way these insurgents are. They didn't. If they cared about those five little girls, they wouldn't have fired from inside that house. We used tanks to respond. And, you know, beyond that, I still think it's fair to ask why the hell we're there. The Labor Department, get this. How about that? Oh, are you ready for this? Especially those of you who are involved in labor issues. The Labor Department has received 662 claims for compensation from relatives of independent contractors. You know, that's fancy speak for mercenaries. Who died working in Iraq. The news of the five slaughtered little girls came on the heels of the release of some documents by your government, my government, our government, that hundreds of these mercenaries have died in Iraq since the beginning of the occupation. 10 British mercenaries have been killed in the past 2 months as well. Remember, we massacred men, women, and children in Fallujah over the burnt bodies of 4 mercenaries in Iraq. And by the way, that is coming to a head. The lawsuit over those 4 dead mercenaries is proceeding in the courts. And it turns out that a federal judge has ruled that, yes, indeedy, the United States of America is liable for its failure. No, is it the United States or is it Halliburton? I think it's Halliburton. I'm sorry, my bad. Liable for under-arming, under-equipping, under-training, under-preparing, and understaffing the patrol that those 4 mercenaries were on when they were ambushed, killed, and their bodies burnt in Fallujah. They hate us for our freedoms. They hate us for our freedoms. 5 young girls. I suppose now we can have a semantic argument, because the right wing is very good at those these days, as to whether those were young girls or young women. Remember that? The story of the girl who was raped, murdered, burnt, and her family shot down like dogs in the street and burnt as well, to which there have now been guilty pleas. There was an absolute right-wing firestorm over the fact that they were referred to as girls and not women, because somehow or another, that is, that's not supporting the troops if you call girls girls when they get slaughtered. What a profound horror, and what a moral quandary this puts any of us in, who believe that our military should not be used in circumstances such as this. Because I know how the right wing responds, and you know how the right wing responds. Well, see, they'll be spitting on them when they fly back to the United States and calling them baby killers and stuff. What do you call someone who premeditatedly plotted the rape and murder of a 15-year-old female and the slaughter of her family? What do you say? My God, my heart is aching. Because, you know, the guy in that tank that fired that round into that house, and the people who squeezed the trigger that blew away those 5 young girls, as they are referred to, most likely saw the consequences of their act. And I'm torn, because on the one hand, you have the likelihood that these people, decent human beings who are members of our military, saw their handiwork, saw the shattered, blown away, blown up, bullet-riddled, pierced, mangled, stitched, torn-across bodies of these 5 young girls, and very likely will see them every night for the rest of their lives. On the other hand, if any of the people squeezing the trigger were the same people as those in the back of that truck in that video that you can go see on YouTube, Iraqi children run for water or whatever, you'll find it. You get the idea that they could have blown those 5 young children away and not given a tinker's damn. You heard the insane laughter, the cackling. And the multimillionaires in the Iraq study group are said to have finally come to the conclusion that it is time that we begin withdrawing our troops. Somehow or another, I get the notion that it was time to start withdrawing our troops the day that the first one set foot in Iraq. because if you would not be an evil person, if you would not be an evil nation, and you would not do evil, the minute you catch yourself doing evil, you must immediately stop doing evil, or you will remain engaged in evil. And this war is evil. And it was started by an evil person. Let's see. I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break. When we come back, your phone calls to 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
This is the home stretch. And we go straight back to the phones. Our good friend Susan calls from Columbia City, Oregon. Susan, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Having fun tonight?
Oh, more than absolutely. By the bucket full.
By the way, did you have a chance to check out that MP3 I sent you?
To be honest, no. It's been kind of harem scarum around here, Susan. I apologize, but
it's something to make you smile. Ever heard of a group called Commander Cody
and the Lost Planet Airmen?
You bet.
Did you send me Hot Rod Lincoln?
Yep. Anyway.
My daddy said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln.
Yeah, I dearly love that song. Anyway, I did some cruising around on YouTube last night.
Yeah.
And all I did for a search string was I put in the word Iraq.
Okay.
Two of them popped up immediately. The first one was disturbing in that it showed a firefight with a bunch of Blackwater contractors.
Mercenaries.
And that was bad enough, but what was really disturbing was the fact that they were ordering a bunch of Army or Marines, I couldn't really tell from the uniform, and these guys were taking the orders. That's what was disturbing.
Wait, the mercenaries were giving orders to American soldiers?
You bet.
What kind of orders, Susan?
Basically telling them what to shoot, when to shoot, and where to shoot.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
So much. Well, that's certainly a different idea of civilian control of the military than I'm used to, but, oh,
yeah,
brother.
Tell me about it. These guys are nothing but mercenaries. The second one was even more disturbing. The second video was even more disturbing. And test your mind back to World War II. How many U.S. airmen died in bombing runs over Germany?
Oh, God, in the thousands, sure. The tens of thousands.
But these were special because they were trying to make sure that they did not obliterate the cathedral at Cologne.
True.
A lot of U.S. servicemen died because we were being oh so careful. This video on YouTube has this rather beautiful mosque sitting there. It's the only building on the road. And these guys are obviously in a tank. And they blow it to hell. Now, it could be argued that they were trying to take care of a high point, a crow's nest, because of the minaret would be a great sniper's nest.
Sure.
There's only one problem. That was the only part that was left standing.
Oh, Lord.
Now that bugs me to death. That's a church.
Of its sort, yes.
Yes.
Theirs sort.
Yeah. Now, translate that.
Now, if a tank came rolling down the middle of Main Street,
and blew the hell out of the nearest Baptist church,
Put a round in the into the First Baptist Temple of Holiness and Herpetological Handling,
yeah. Can you imagine the hoorah it would start?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or say a tank came rolling down the street, put a round into the Crystal Cathedral.
Yeah, or maybe the big prayer tower at Oral Roberts University.
Mm-hmm. Or the Mormon Tabernacle. Or, for that matter, the temple.
Yeah.
Let's face it, the tabernacle isn't consecrated. The temple is.
Not that I know the difference between the two, but yeah.
Oh, I do. Daddy's granddad was a Mormon elder. But...
One of the underwear guys.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Hey,
I just can't get over that. We got a dude who's going to run for president of the United States that wears special underwear.
Yeah, I know. It's just...
That's okay. We got a few in the Senate, too.
I know. I must... this drink. Yeah, I figure if they want to... Well, whatever turns them on.
Hey, you know, if you've got BVDs blessed by Joseph Smith, more power to you.
Yeah, but by the same token, how would they feel if a tank came rolling down the road and put it...
And blew it away!
Blew it up!
The next question, Susan, is would the guys who shot back at the tank for blowing up the church be called insurgents, or would they be called defenders of the faith?
Exactly. And, let's face it, the Mormon Church is not known for taking it on the chin.
My God, no. Once they got to Utah, they slaughtered everybody else that came in and conned the Indians into... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't put...
It's not a happy history, Susan.
In fact, the more... Oh, man.
Most of religious history in the United States is not a happy history.
Yeah.
As our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com pointed out prior to Thanksgiving, the pilgrims didn't come here because they wanted to be religiously free of England. England was perfectly willing to let them worship any old freaky way that they wanted to. They wanted to kill everybody else.
Yeah.
They didn't seek religious freedom for themselves. They sought it from...
everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I... that's not very well known, and it's like... everybody thinks that the Salem witch trials, they had, first of all, that they actually killed witches. They didn't. And
they put rocks on the chest of an old guy.
Yeah, and that was not all, that wasn't because he was a witch. That was because he got up on his high horse and said, well, actually, he didn't say anything. That's why they did that. He refused to say a word. Because
at his trial, and they pressed him to death.
Would be twisted. So he was silent. And they said, you're going to say something, come hell or high water. Well, off he went to hell,
yeah,
according to their light. But what most people don't know is the Salem witch trials, there were no burnings either. The people executed for witchcraft were hung.
That's true.
And there were no witches, because they were smart enough to leave.
They were just little girls and servant slave women, weren't they?
Actually, the whole thing was started by two teenage girls.
Yeah, who got caught being teenage girls.
Yeah, they were, and they were trying to lie their way out of it, so they said, well, they made me do it.
Because they're a witch.
Yeah, and that started the whole panic. But there were actually witches. But being intelligent people, they made it a point to go head for the high country.
Well, why they would want to hang out with the likes of the Puritans, I'll never know.
Well, that's just it. They got over to this country and split.
Yeah.
We learned early.
But, you know, I really don't want to come down and make it sound like I'm just uniformly bashing the military. That is not my point. What I'm criticizing and what I'm bashing is this system that has put these people in this place where they perpetrate these horrors because of the horror in which they are submerged.
Well, you know what really, really, really is disturbing about the video with the mosque?
What?
They knew what they were doing because the video is labeled war crime.
Oh, dear. They labeled it that way?
Yes. If you put in Iraq war crime, it's going to come up.
Well, I think I just found it. Yeah.
Yeah. They knew exactly what they were doing.
Oh, brother. Oh, dear God. Five little girls. You know, it's five little girls here, two little boys there, a mother, a father, an aunt, an uncle, a cousin.
This is an army that is out of control.
It's a leadership that's out of control. Yes.
And I have absolutely... I don't want to even think about it. I'm sure these are highly classified statistics. Do you want to make a bet on how many sergeants and officers on the U.S. side are being fragged?
Don't know. Don't exactly get a lot of information about that.
No, they're not going to give that out, but I can bet you it's probably...
But see, that's why I said what I said to Ed, Susan. I don't want a phased redeployment.
No.
I want them home.
Yeah.
And I want to start the healing. And I want to start fixing the military.
Yeah.
because it has been shattered, it has been broken, it has been morally compromised, and we have a hell of a lot of rebuilding to do, and the sooner we start, the better off we'll be.
Yeah. When you get to the point when the troops are starting to scrag their own leaders, it's time.
Yeah.
Disengage. Yeah. We need to get out of there because they've gone into anarchy over there. They're not even in a civil war anymore. It's devolved past the civil war into anarchy.
Yeah, it's just kill. It's a killing frenzy.
Yeah. It.
But by the same token, I haven't much patience for the level of semantic discourse on whether or not it's a civil war. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the chattering class and the pundits and the geniuses. And wow, you could call it a civil war, or you could call it sectarian violence based upon blah 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 blah.
Did you see that thing on Buzzflash? I can't decide if that's a parody or if that's actually true.
Which one?
It's where he is. Where they are. I sincerely hope it's a parody, because if it's not, it means that the gentleman has gone completely gaga. Let's bring it up here.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, I love it that Stephen Hawking is saying we need to colonize other planets. That's hit the wires in the last couple of days. And you know what? I agree with him.
Yeah, we need to get off the word contaminating this one to pass the point of...
Well, I don't know. You know, you're a Robert A. Heinlein fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think back to The Moon is a Harsh Mistress.
Yeah.
And the concept of the moon as a prison colony.
Yeah.
Because the theory being, after you stay there a little bit, it becomes a life sentence biologically imposed.
I think I ran into it.
I don't know if I want to go to the. I don't know if I want to go to the moon and leave the creeps here, or if I want to send the creeps to the moon.
I don't want to go to the moon because it's not self-sustaining. I want to go to a planet where it's self-sustaining, because. And for another thing, there's more room. There was a study done several years ago with rats, and they used rats. Psychologists use rats a lot to predict human behavior.
Sure.
And if you put a couple rats in a big maze, they run around and do their thing, and they're happy little campers. If you fill that maze up with rats,
they begin to tear at each other.
They go crazy and rip each other apart. Overpopulation. Too many people in one place.
Yeah, true.
People.
Well, I just, dadgummit, you know, like I said, I love stories like, Stephen Hawking colonized other planets, the definitive answer found on what the Antikythera device did.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, all of these things point to the potential of the human spirit.
Yeah.
When the human spirit is guided by healthy curiosity and a forward look, a progressive look, a liberal look, staring the future boldly in the eye and daring to move into it, you know, because when we're led by conservatism, when we're led by backwards looking and fear mongering, then you get the chimpanzee with the thigh bone dancing around the monolith, the 2001 kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And right now, you know, the authoritarians and the conservatives or the neocons or what the hell, however the hell you want to baptize them,
mm-hmm.
They're the ones that are trying to drag humanity into its own demise, and I resent it, and it just flat out makes me mad.
Yeah, and if it gets to the point where things get that bad. Yeah, I think we ought to make sure we take them with us. if we're going to go down, let's take somebody to pay the ferryman fee.
Well, there's always at the end of the evening, there's always so much stuff that I haven't discussed, Susan.
Oh yeah.
That I never got to. I got a story here. Pope Benedict XVI has invited former U.S. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger to be a political consultant to the Vatican, and Kissinger has accepted.
Because in the United States, they're going to bust somebody's going to nail him for war crimes.
He's going to join a papal advisory board on foreign and political affairs. The Pope, the See of St. Peter, if you buy into that hokum. The Vicar of Christ is going to take political and international intrigue advice.
From a war criminal. Of course, he's a Nazi, so what's the thing different, you know?
Well, I'm told he's actually not, but, could have fooled me.
Neither was Adolf Hitler.
You know, my God.
I'm cynical, I guess. Anyway, I that was a parody site I ran into. Somebody very cleverly.
I saw something on the World Trade Organization that I had to look at three times yesterday to make sure I was looking at a parody, because it looked awfully about the World Trade Organization sanctioning slavery.
It was George Bush had signed an executive order saying that all references to the American Civil War had to be renamed.
Jesus. Yeah, and that's the thing. Life is so bizarre, so strange, so weird now, Susan.
It's really sad.
That you got to look at everything twice.
When you have to, do double and triple takes to try and figure out what's parody and what's not.
Right. No. Well, I'm going to roll on. Thank you so much, Susan, and you have a wonderful evening.
You too.
And a great weekend. I'll be back Monday.
Well, have fun.
Going to try. Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And, a couple more minutes. Let's see who this is.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, is this Bob?
This is Bob.
Okay, you answered me, so I know I'm on the air. Hi, this is Diana up in Olympia, Washington.
Hi, Diana, how are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good, but I'm kind of down a little bit, because I'll tell you why. I mean, it seems like Nancy Pelosi isn't coming up to the plate for me. And Harry Reid, I didn't have much hope for Harry Reid anyhow. I thought he was sort of more middle of the road. But I thought Nancy would go after the war more, stridently. And I'm really concerned. I mean, here we've got President Bush over there, won't even go into the green zone in Baghdad to talk to Malarkey.
Malarkey. I think Malarkey works best.
But, and then the Pope, ironically, is in the same part of the world there, praying in the Blue Mosque in Turkey. And, both of these guys seem like they're behaving with a kind of a shame-based behavior, which I think is a good sign, because we should be ashamed of what we've done over there, and I think the Pope is ashamed for what he said.
I don't know how much shame you can assign to the Pope when he turns around and hires Henry Kissinger.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
Is that?
No. Henry Kissinger has been appointed to a papal advisory board for Benedict XVI.
He must have made a big payment or something. I don't know. I am a kind of a wayward type Catholic, so I don't like to see the Catholic Church doing things like that. But
well, I've got a press release here, Diana. It's interesting you would mention it. Headline: I found it over at truthout.org. Catholics around the globe urge Pope Benedict XVI to lift ban on condoms.
I like that headline.
Ain't gonna happen. Doesn't matter how many billions die in die from HIV AIDS or various and sundry other diseases that are sexually transmitted on the African continent, among other places. It does not matter.
But
there ain't gonna be no condoms.
Okay, aside from the birth control thing, that is medieval. I've always thought the church is medieval about that. But I'm concerned about the Iraq war and why we've got all these people talking and acting out like they're ashamed. I mean, Bush won't even face the people in the country by going into their country. The Pope goes to Turkey to pray in a mosque. I mean, that's only the second time, I guess, the Pope has even been near a Muslim country.
Right.
So, I mean, what we're dealing with is we have to come to the awareness that we are in a shame-based behavior mode. We're just getting into that. And when we were going through the Vietnam War, it wasn't until we saw those pictures of the little girl running down the road naked with napalm on her back.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to have some reality check. And if Nancy Pelosi doesn't come up to the plate, and when she said impeachment was off the table, man, I'll tell you, I had it. It just felt terrible. And I think a lot of other people are feeling terrible. Even though I can see where they're saying, well, okay, let's get some things done. But couldn't they do both of them, those things?
Well, I think they could if the Congress was, if the Democratic majority, Diana, is willing to work half as hard as, say, an RN pulling a 14-hour shift or a guy who does engine mechanic work 10 hours a day. If they're willing to work half that hard, they can do both of those things and many, many more.
Well, now, I have the vision.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the vision and the humility and the empathy and the things that Sarge was talking about, the empathy. We have to empathize with what we're doing to these people over there. I mean, these are human beings. And we're acting like they're just something far away. Or I don't think September 11th has anything to do with this. This has to do with our arrogance.
Or our ignorance.
Oh, absolutely our ignorance. But, you know, I'm not excusing, pardon me for saying this, but I'm not excusing they call them insurgents, but like Michael Moore, who I get his website all the time,
uh-huh.
He calls them freedom fighters. And he had a wonderful letter that he posts letters once in a while on his website, and he was talking about the comparisons to the colonies of the United States, how the French came and helped us to get rid of a despot, and then they left. Okay, we helped them. Now we say we helped them. I don't think that's why they were there, and we all know we're not there for that, but we helped them get rid of Saddam. So why didn't we leave? And what happened to John Murtha? How come he's not on the news anymore?
Well, I think a lot of them
and helped him to try and get on that committee. And now he's invisible again.
I think a lot of them are laying low, waiting for this much vaunted Iraq study group to report to come out. What is it, next Wednesday?
Yeah.
There's a lot of keep your powder dry going on in Washington right now. The other thing is that they've not taken power. They haven't been sworn in. They're not the new majority yet. I'm not making excuses for them, Diana. I think we should be burning up the telephone lines, letting them know that we, by God, demand impeachment.
Well, didn't it seem strange or funny that the Pope is in the blue mosque and Bush can't even go to the green zone? I mean, blues, we're all getting the blues, and Bush can't face the beauty of the green zone. Oh, wow, real beauty in the green zone. The only thing you can do in the green zone is duck. Apparently they're shooting a mortar, or not mortars, but missiles. They can shoot those into the green zone.
Yeah.
So that's why Bush won't even go there.
It's going.
But the whole point of this is that we've got to. Our country is really in some deep doo doo. I'm telling you.
Yeah, we are.
We can't face after the Democrats won. Okay, we've only won by one seat in the Senate or whatever it is, but. I think we've got to have some visionaries. You know, my husband and I, we rented that video, The Inconvenient Truth,
mm-hmm.
and we watched only half of it last night because it was so hard to take, and we're going to watch the rest tomorrow night. But, I mean, I didn't realize that all these years that Gore had been doing all this research on the global warming issue,
mm-hmm.
and now he tells us, in this video, that he's been doing all this work on global warming. What was he doing for the 8 years he was vice president? Why wasn't he standing up there and saying, you know that we're killing the planet, our children aren't going to have anything?
Well, Diana, was driven by what the Clinton administration wanted.
It
wasn't like this administration where the vice president's the head man. We're fresh out of time, Diana. I hope you'll call back again and we can have a longer conversation.
Oh, thanks. I love your show.
Thank you kindly. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye. Diana in Olympia, Washington. Thanks, everybody, for participating in every way and any way. It's what makes this all worth doing, and I'm not kidding. The show tonight, of course, was announced by Brian Reznor and engineered by John Fox down in Sydney, Australia. John is. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasting of all the shows on the Head On Radio Network. Peter Godbold is our IT professional. We have wonderful moderators in the Head On Radio Network chat room, as well as great, great blog managers at the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com blog. And, of course, every program comes to you by virtue of the hard work of several thousand members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. They're building the American dream and helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR. It's all for you.
Troops. The unanimous vote for a one-year extension was in response to a request from Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. The bipartisan Iraq Study Group, led by former Secretary of State James Baker, wrapped up 2 days of meetings behind closed doors in Washington today. Pope Benedict XVI arrived in Turkey today for his first visit to the mostly Muslim country. Amidst tight security, he urged a dialogue between